The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It's NFL Draft Week, and I'm excited. We said, where there's smoke, there's fire. But this whole Tua Tagovailoa sliding down out of the top 10 has felt like a smoke screen. But is that flames possibly licking up underneath the smoke? Is there something to the idea that Tua Tagovailoa could be sliding? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up on today's show, Michael Jordan was just different, man. And although the documentary The Last Dance aired on ESPN last night and didn't begin until 9 p.m. Eastern time, there was one line, one moment in the first two episodes where I wanted to wake my boys up. One thing I wanted them to learn from the greatest of all time. And we all did our homework. We watched our nominations for our favorite comedy stand-up bit since the year 2000. Bubba, Nuno, Mike A., Pat, and myself. In the third hour of the show, we'll vote on who had the best nomination. But coming up in about 45 minutes, as always, who got last? Whose stand-up special was the worst of the five nominated? That's all coming up a little bit later on The Will Cain Show. Peter King, in his Monday column, Football Morning in America, has a mock draft out. His final mock draft before the first round of the NFL draft on Thursday night. In that mock, Peter King has Tua Tagovailoa sliding, not just out of the top 10, but to the 13th pick. And at the 13th pick, he has the New England Patriots trading up with the San Francisco 49ers to take their quarterback of the future, Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. It's not just stunning for the fall projected for Tua, but for the leap projected by the New England Patriots. We've said this all sounds like a smokescreen. Quarterback inflation is a truism. It's more likely you have to go to number 3 than you can wait on number 13 to pick Tua. But if I gave you a multiple choice, if I said to you that Tua would slide or you'd have to trade for Tua, what would you pick? Because more and more what we're hearing is Justin Herbert is the quarterback that everybody wants after Joe Burrow. More and more it sounds like not just the Los Angeles Chargers, but the Miami Dolphins might be targeting the quarterback out of Oregon. Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network was on Golic and Wingo this morning laying out the thought process.
In terms of my opinion, as players, I thought Tua was a much better player, and that's why it was hard for me to reconcile that. But I've heard just from too many people that are plugged into that organization about there being a little bit of a split. They all love Burrow, but that's done. I mean, he's basically installing the Cincinnati offense right now, so cross him off the list. So the number two guy comes down to whether it's Tua or Herbert. And so when you hear that there's a split and you say, okay, well, in this case, Ty would probably go to the healthier player. So that leads me to believe it would be Herbert. But, you know, it's always tricky on these questions because you're like, yeah, I buy it from the sense that I think that's what they'll do. I don't buy it from the sense that I think it's the smart decision.
The draft week rumors are flying, by the way. If we're trying to parse out what's a smokescreen, you should know there are rumors of almost everything happening. You've got the Broncos and the Jaguars potentially looking to trade up. You've got the San Francisco 49ers and the Cleveland Browns and the New York Giants and the Detroit Lions all looking to trade down. There are rumors of New York Jets safety Jamal Adams potentially being traded this week. Leonard Fournette is on the trading block. But where will he end up? There are suggestions the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would not be interested in trading for the Jacksonville Jaguars running back. Wide receiver Christian Kirk from the Arizona Cardinals, Trent Williams from the Redskins, Andy Dalton, quarterback from the Bengals. All of those rumors are flying. All of those existing players could potentially get traded this week. And while that's going on, Yannick Ngakoue, the edge rusher, who is on a franchise tag with the Jacksonville Jaguars, is currently in a war of words with his owner, or the owner's son, Tony Khan, right now, or within the last couple of hours. Ngakoue tweeted at his owner's son, "Stop hiding, Mo." And then Khan responded, "I'm not hiding, sir. I'm in isolation, getting ready for the draft. I've been pretty active on social media in isolation, but you wouldn't know since you unfollowed me again." To which his star defensive end said, "Since your feelings might be hurt today, let's both let the world in on the truth. We've been had a discussion that the Chargers game was my last game, yet you try to backdoor the situation without answering any of my camp's calls. You spoiled, brah. Holding up people for no reason." Then Khan responds, "Tweeting insults at me won't get you trade any faster. Only compensation will." Then Ngakoue says, "Just trade me. I don't need a speech." Finally, Khan says, "Show me the compensation." An owner and a player literally having it out on Twitter over whether or not they can possibly find a future together. And all of that smoke leads us back to the biggest mystery of draft week. What will happen with Tua Tagovailoa? I'll give you the multiple choice. In fact, let's make it three options. What do you think is most likely? Option number one, as Peter King projects in his mock draft, Tua Tagovailoa slides down, possibly outside of the top 10. He doesn't go projected to the Dolphins nor to the Chargers, but rather some mystery team that's either going to have him fall in their lap or they can leap up and grab him in a trade. That's option A. Option B, it goes exactly almost as every mock draft projects right now. Tua and Herbert get drafted at 5 and 6 by the Dolphins and the Chargers in whatever order or whatever priority those teams have those quarterbacks. That's option B. Or option C, you have to trade up to number 3 to get your quarterback. A, B, or C. Which option is most likely? Michael Rothstein, ESPN's NFL Nation Lions reporter, was on game day, and he was talking about that last option, C, trade up to number 3.
And it's what Bob Quinn, I think, would prefer to do. When he had his Zoom call, the media on Friday, he even said in one of the first questions, drafting at 3 or wherever we pick. Right. So he is very, very clearly open to a trade. It's just a matter of whether or not he can find a partner to trade with. Now, is that Miami? Is that the Chargers? Is that maybe Jacksonville? Is that somebody else? I don't know. Bob Quinn has said that he would like to have a really good idea of what he's going to have happen on Thursday night by Thursday afternoon.
The Lions would like to trade down. They just don't know if anyone's going to be there for them. Can the Dolphins and Chargers sit back at 5 and 6? Because nobody's going to jump up ahead of them and take the quarterbacks. Are the Chargers happy to sit behind the Dolphins and take whichever quarterback falls to them? Or are we all presuming that the Dolphins and Chargers will take one of these guys instead of them sliding out altogether? A, B, or C? Here's what I think. I think the answer is C. I think the Lions will find their trade partner. I think somebody will trade to number 3. I think it could be the Chargers. I think it could be the Dolphins. I think somebody will trade to number 3, but what I'm not capable of saying, what I can't tell, what I can't wave through the smoke to find out if there's real flames on, is if that trade up will be for Tua or, in fact, for Justin Herbert. But somebody, as always, with quarterback inflation, will be trading up to number 3. And that's my opening take, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. The first two episodes of The Last Dance, the documentary on the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, aired last night on ESPN. And there was one line from Michael Jordan that caught my attention in particular. Many people today are talking about all the different areas of that 2 hours of documentary that caught their attention. And today on The Will Cain Show, I want to explore many of those, including, is Jerry Krause, then Bulls GM, being made out too simply as the villain in this documentary? But the one line that I wanted to shake my boys awake and say, come listen to this, I'll tell you next on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
When he got on the fast break and he did that cradle to the grave, dropped that thing off in there, flushed the toilet, that changed the game. It was MJ. It was Pip. It was Rodman, former bad boy. Now joining the Bulls.
I'm still reeling after watching. It really teleported me back to that era.
It's so ill.
2 hours of determination. 2 hours of focus. 2 hours of understanding that Michael Jordan was just different. But there's one line that made me want to share it with my sons. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. During the commercial break, our Supreme Leader Nuno told us the Jacksonville Jaguars have just released wide receiver Marquise Lee, leading to the question, what are the Jaguars doing? With Leonard Fournette on the trading block, are the Jaguars in full tank mode? I think the Jacksonville Jaguars have just become one of the most interesting teams in the NFL over the next two seasons. They're sitting with two picks in the first round this year, number 9 and number 20. There are some rumors that they might look to trade up. They need a cornerback. They need a lot in Jacksonville. But next year, they also have two first-round picks, their own and the Los Angeles Rams. If, in fact, the Jags are tanking this year or not putting the best squad forward in order to be in prime position to draft Trevor Lawrence, the generational quarterback out of Clemson, next year, then the Jags should not be trading up. They should be trading down from that 9th pick or trading that 9th pick and acquiring more future first. If they could go into the 2021 draft with three first rounders, they'd have the ammunition to buy the number one overall pick if they didn't end up with it themselves. We've had this conversation several times on the Will Cain Show, but who would sell the number one pick? Who would trade away no matter the price if Trevor Lawrence is as good as advertised? Well, the answer to that is any team who's already got a franchise quarterback in-house. So imagine if the Cincinnati Bengals ended up with the number one pick again next year. Having just drafted Joe Burrow, they're not likely to draft Trevor Lawrence, meaning the highest bidder, in this case the Jags with multiple first-round picks, could leap up and take Trevor. But I think there's a second most fascinating thought process to what the Jags are doing. And that ties into our first segment today. What if Tua is sliding? Peter King in his mock draft had Tua slide at number 13. He had the Chargers taking a tackle at the 6th pick. He had the Dolphins taking Justin Herbert out of Oregon. If that's the case, if Tua starts to slide and you're sitting there as the Jags, at some point do you say, well, we could take Tua this year or we could gamble? And it would be a gamble, because if it's not the Bengals end up with a top pick, if it's a team that needs a quarterback, then they're not going to be willing to trade with you. Do you go ahead and take Tua this year and say, well, Trevor might be the better prospect. Tua's the bird in the hand. Don't worry about the two in the bush. I think the Jags and what they do this year and next year become one of the most fascinating teams in the NFL. And that's setting aside the fight that their owner and Yannick Ngakoue are having on Twitter as we speak. The Last Dance, the documentary on the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, began its airing last night. It's a 10-part series airing every Sunday on ESPN. Last night, parts 1 and 2 aired. They covered the beginning of the end for the Chicago Bulls, the problems with the players in the front office in 1997, and it rewinds both into Michael Jordan's beginnings, his draft, growing up in North Carolina, and Scottie Pippen's beginnings. Can you believe it? Scottie Pippen was the equipment manager on a Division II NAIA school, Central Arkansas, the equipment manager. And apparently, I think it was between his freshman and sophomore year, he grew from 6'1 to 6'7 or something and just got better at an astronomical clip. Ended up getting a scholarship, which he had to talk the coach into giving him. And before you know it, he's the fifth pick in the NBA draft. The entire documentary was full of moments. And I think we went into it knowing this. We talked about it here on the show. We talked about this is going to be a lesson in competitive nature. This is going to be a lesson in determination. Because we know that's what made Michael Jordan different. But to begin to see it last night was a whole nother animal. Here's a couple stories. My three favorites. Number one, Michael Jordan, as everyone knows at this point, didn't make varsity his sophomore year in high school. He was cut. He comes back, just like Pippen's story, he grows between those 2 years, sophomore and junior year of high school, and then he begins his career as one of the best basketball players in the nation. But he arrives at North Carolina, and there's a line from Roy Williams, now Tar Heels head coach Roy Williams, then assistant coach Roy Williams. And Michael Jordan says to Williams, "I want to be the best player who's ever played at North Carolina." And Williams says, "Well, then you're going to have to work harder than anybody's ever worked. Anybody is working on this team." And he said, "What are you talking about? I always work hard. I was the hardest worker on my high school team. I always worked hard." He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to be the best player that ever played here." And Jordan said, "You watch. Nobody's ever going to outwork me." And by the way, when you watch this and you see the way Jordan speaks and the intensity and focus with which he trains his eyes on whatever the subject matter is, it's just different, man. It is an absolutely focused, determined human being. A second story is that his rookie year in Chicago, after coming out of North Carolina, which he described as a very sheltered existence, a clean program, everyone following the rules, he knocked on the door in a hotel room where all his teammates were supposed to be and nobody would answer the door. And he said when he knocked on the door, he heard, "Shh, shh, 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 somebody's outside." They said, "Who is it?" He said, "It's MJ." He said, "Oh, hell, it's just a rookie. Let him in." He said he went in, and in what would be described as a cocaine circus, everything, every vice was represented in a hotel room. Over here, you had guys doing lines. Over here, you had the guys smoking weeds. Over here, you had women. And Jordan said, he said, "I'm out. I'm leaving." Wasn't into those things, didn't drink in those days, but more importantly, he said, "I knew if that room got raided, I was as guilty as every single other person in that room, and I was here for a purpose. I was here to win." And Michael Jordan's dedication to winning is what stands out. It's just absolutely clear. This is what, when we have LeBron versus Michael Jordan debates, this is the distinguishing factor. It's not athleticism, it's not size, it's not even Michael Jordan's ability, which is so weird, to hang in the air an extra second, half second, than anyone else. It's his mental makeup. And that's not an insult to LeBron James, who is absolutely a focused and determined winner. But what you learn when you see this stuff is there are levels to it. And by the way, it's not all cool. It's not all healthy. I mean, Jordan is not an easy person to be around. And I mean, you ought to say this, not a great dude. I spent the weekend reading in the lead up to The Last Dance stories of Jordan, first of all, and who knows if these stories are true, because most of them are hearsay, being a chameleonaire, the Houston rapper, going up to Jordan trying to get a picture taken with him, and the way Jordan treated him was terrible. And guys at the table like Spike Lee and Paul Pierce reportedly later apologized to chameleonaires like, "That's just the way Jordan is." And then, and I don't know if this story is true at all, but I saw Warren Sharp of Sharp Football talking about Jordan taking Barkley out. No, if this isn't true, please jump in and tell me. Jordan taking Barkley out during the NBA Finals with the Phoenix Suns and playing 48 holes of golf with him, buying him earrings and all of that, and then dropping something like 55 on the Suns the next day. So I said, "Why'd you do that?" "Because Barkley thinks I like him. I don't like him, but that's a cheap, $20,000 nothing to me. To get in Barkley's head." I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard Barkley say that story wasn't true. But here's the part that was true that I found the most fascinating. When Jordan was a rookie, he comes in. He's already starting to be hailed as a great player. But he knew, "I can't be the leader of this team. I can't use my voice. This is what I wanted to wake my boys up to tell them and show them." He's like, "So what I did is I identified who the leader on the team was. And I went after him as hard as possible every single day, destroying him in practice until it was absolutely clear to everybody who the best player on the team was and whose team this would be. I couldn't have done it with my voice. I was just a rookie. I was 21 years old. But I could do it with my play. And so I found the leader and I targeted him." It's like a new lion taking, this is me saying this, this is like a new lion taking control of the pride. It's just over. My team. And very shortly afterwards, my league. This Last Dance recap on the Will Cain Show is brought to you by AT&T. I want to get into more. How did Jordan slip to the number three pick? Well, what's fascinating is the entire league, every single team in the league, they didn't really want a 6'6 swing, man. The league was built for 7-footers, and they thought Jordan would just be, he's pretty good. That thought process, plus the thought process that says Jerry Krause is absolutely 100% cut and dried, black and white, clear, villain. He destroyed the Bulls. That's all coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Who had the worst nomination for the best stand-up special since 2000? We'll settle that debate coming up in about 15 minutes on the Will Cain Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. On phone lines now is the SEC Network's Cole Kublik to break down, I guess, the most exciting week in sports we've had in a month, the NFL Draft Week. What's up, Cole?
Oh, I'm doing great, Will. Maybe even more than a month. I think the anticipation of this draft is going to be completely next level. I'm dying to get a couple of Roger Goodell basement picks going here.
You know what else is adding to the excitement, I think, is that we don't have our arms around exactly what could happen. We had this quote that came out last week. I think Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network said this, that some of the GMs in the NFL think that mock drafts have never been more off in their memory, that because perhaps we're not congregating at pro days and having everybody formulate the same groupthink opinions, these picks could be all over the board, that we have no idea what teams are thinking or where they're going to go, and we should be prepared absolutely with big curveballs.
You know, I thought before this pandemic hit that we were going to see more first-round trades than maybe we had ever seen, and I wonder now, is the technology and how these draft war rooms are going to be set up, which are not exactly going to be draft war rooms, these draft war setups via phone, internet, Zoom, Skype, text, whatever, FaceTime, is that going to slow it down to the point that some people just say, you know what, we can't get it done. Just draft him, move on, that's our guy, we'll deal with it later. Maybe more post-drafted player trades, so player picked by the Detroit Lions, and then that player traded, 30 minutes later for another pick or two. I think that's probably more viable than just flat-out trades. But because of the top-end talent on both sides of the spectrum here, you've got heavy top-end talent at a few positions, and then I think you have very limited top-end talent at other positions. So true edge rusher, it's Chase Young. There's a pretty big step down, and then it's the rest of your guys. Somebody going to make a move for Chase Young? You can get good value late first, early second, maybe middle of the third, but it's not going to be anywhere near what the guy is at that position. I think defensive tackle. It's Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw, and then it's a pretty big step down. Somebody going to make a move for one of those guys? Offensive tackle, there's four of them. Obviously, Becton, Werf, Wills, and who am I forgetting? Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. It's those four, and there's a pretty big step down after those guys. Wide receiver, there's a plethora. You're loaded. Corner, Jeff Okuda, and it's a step down. I think C.J. Henderson's closer, but it's still tier one is Jeff Okuda at corner. Make no mistake. I don't think there's good numbers at inside linebacker. I think after Xavier McKinney, I don't think there's great numbers at safety. So some of these teams, and then Tua is the wild card at everything. I mean, Tua is a generational talent, but you have to be concerned about how many games is he going to give you? Is he going to be able to dress out and play for your football team the next week, the next 3 weeks, the next 3 years? That's a legitimate concern that you have to have based on the history. So I think you got some teams in a couple of spots where one or two teams may look at a guy that they want to move up for because they know he's a plug-and-play guy. Tristan Wirfs, plug-and-play guy. Jedrick Wills, plug-and-play guy. Derek Brown, there's plug-and-play guys. Jerry Jeudy, across the board. Chase Young, we mentioned. Obviously, we know Burrow's off the board at number one. So I think there's going to be movement because people are going to want some of those plug-and-play guys, that legitimate step-in-and-start talent that they know they can depend on, as opposed to maybe some of the question marks in this draft. And then I think round three is going to be very interesting. There is more running back production that's going to come off the board late day two and day three than we've ever seen in college football. Keyshawn Vaughn, A.J. Dillon, even LaMichael Perrien out of Florida. Jonathan Taylor's not going to be a first-round draft pick, and he's one of the most productive running backs we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get legit running back appeal in middle, late second, maybe even early middle of the third and beyond. And you're going to get a guy that you can get in and play for you right now. So there's a lot of intriguing portions of this draft, but some of that plug-and-play talent at the top at certain positions, I think, has to lead to some movement.
You said a couple of things there, many of which I agree with, a couple I disagree with. Let's explore the disagreement. First, on the agreement, I think that while teams might want to trade, I actually think the technology, as you point out, is going to be a problem. That seems like there's going to be a lot going on. I'm dealing with internet issues right now. Before I came into this segment with you, I'm serious, man. I told the guys, I'm not sure. It's looking touch and go here on this segment on my internet. It came back. So how's that going to work during the draft, pulling off complicated trades and all that? So that's one. I think you identified all the positions that seem to be top heavy. Edge, corner, positions like that. Two that I thought I have some disagreement with you. I'm willing to bet you this offensive tackle class ends up being a five, not a four person group. I think Josh Jones out of Houston could go in the middle of those four at some point. In other words, he could go before one of the four, or he just goes in a distinguishable couple of picks later than the last one. So I think those five guys, including Jones from Houston, end up in the top 15 picks. That's what I think happens at tackle. I want to hear your response to that. But the other one is, and this one's a little more in the weeds for a bit. I love the draft, so I like doing it. Is, you said inside linebacker you thought was a little heavy as well. I don't know. You got Murray, right, from Oklahoma, Queen from LSU. But then I was looking at guys like Logan Wilson from Wyoming and the kid from Appalachian State. It just looked to me like if you want an inside linebacker, you might have some options in rounds three and four, potentially.
And that may be your best bet, because I think Patrick Queen still comes with risks. He hadn't played a ton of football. Now, granted, he's sitting behind Devin White, which, you know, that's a top five draft pick. So getting on the field in front of that dude is going to be difficult. But I think Patrick Queen can play. I think he's a big-time player. I think Kenneth Murray can play a little bit light, but I don't think that's going to scare NFL teams off based on where offenses are heading these days. So if you don't think you can get a generational guy where you're picking in the first round, you're right. Might as well wait. Kind of like the running back scenario that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Why waste a first-round pick when you can go get an ultra-productive back in the back end of the second, or maybe middle of the third, which you're going to be able to get good running backs at that point. So that's intriguing. Josh Jones is solid. He's athletic for his frame. He's a bit of a backbender. He bends at the waist a little bit too much. I question his lower body flexibility. And to say that he's going to come off the board in front of some of those four, I find that difficult to believe. I think that those four that I mentioned are so intriguing because
– I know, but Wirfs, I feel like Wirfs is a wild card, Cole. Like, I think there are some teams – he's just such a workout warrior, and I'm not saying he can't play. He and Becton are the ones – I don't know. Does everybody love them as much as some other teams? I bet you some love them, and others are like, I don't know.
And it's personal preference. We're picking flavors of ice cream with these tackles. The thing that frustrates me is that we've moved into this left and right tackle doesn't matter anymore, which I agree we're heading that direction. And where football is, how the football is distributed, how people are rushed, how they rush the passer, how the defenses are in line, the pace, the tempo of defenses, you can find a way to get your best pass rusher on the least blocker that a team is going to put up front. But, I mean, it depends on what your need is. If you're just looking for – if you want – nasty road grader, you want a guy who's going to move people around and change the demeanor of your offensive line, it's Jedrick Wills. I think he's the best overall prospect at the tackle position. But if you need a plug-and-play guy at left tackle right now, right this very second, Thomas, it's Andrew Thomas out of Georgia.
Right,
it's got to be. He's got the most legitimate reps on the left side. Now, it's not to say that Jedrick Wills can't do it, but I've never seen him do it. The film doesn't exist of him playing left tackle. So the safer pick at left is Andrew Thomas. Tristan Wirfs is a mauler. I mean, he's a bulldozer. And I love his motor. I love his energy. I love the way he plays. I think he's closer to his ceiling than any of the other guys that we'll mention. And Becton's a ceiling guy. If you got a couple of years, if you don't need him to come in and instantaneously be an all-pro type player, you're willing to give him a year or two to sort of figure things out, Mekhi Becton's worth the risk, because you can't coach 6'7", 345 that has the ability to move the way that he does. He's dominant in the run game. He is a human excavator in the road game. And he picks guys up and moves them out of the trenches in the run game. Obviously, right. He's still a little bit raw. Dwayne Ledford would have loved to have had him come back for another year at Louisville, but his ceiling is higher than any of these guys. And if you can get him in the right fit with the right coach, keep his weight under control, he has a chance to be a great one.
All right, it's the SEC Network's Cole Kublik here on the Will Cain Show. Deep dive on offensive tackles, a little inside linebacker talk. Not exactly the standard quarterback talk when it comes to the NFL draft. But I like doing it. I appreciate it, Cole. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Will.
All right, coming up, we did our homework. We each nominated Bubba, Nuno, Pat, Mike A., and myself, our favorite stand-up specials since 2000. It was Bill Burr, it was Chappelle, it was Louis C.K., it was Norm MacDonald, and it was Patrice O'Neill. We'll nominate our favorite. We'll vote who won in the third hour show. But first, as always, who got last? Who was worst? Next on the Will Cain Show.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
This is Will Cain.
You can't walk through life that if something you say or something you champion offends one person, then you must stop, because you will not be able to do anything.
If you like the NFL draft, we've got you covered. Ed Werder, Mel Kiper Jr., all coming up soon here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Plus, the first two episodes of The Last Dance, the documentary on ESPN covering the final year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, paints then-GM Jerry Krause as the clear villain. Is it all too neat and simple? We'll explore that coming up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. But it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Every weekend, we've assigned our homework. It's been a movie category, a genre. Heist movies, war movies, buddy cop movies. And we have each, Pat, Nuno, Mike A., Bubba, and myself, nominated our favorites. This past weekend, it was Best Stand-Up Comedy Special since 2000. We have a lot to say, but here were the nominations. I nominated Bill Burr's You People Are All the Same. Bubba nominated Norm MacDonald's new special on Netflix, Hitler's Dog. Nuno, Patrice O'Neill, Elephant in the Room. Pat, Louis C.K., Live at the Beacon. And Mike A., Dave Chappelle, Killing Them Softly. I think there is not unanimity on this. I think we have some disagreement. And I think it's going to be fascinating. Fellas, first of all, I have two observations before we each say what we thought was the worst. They were all good. But watching five comedy specials in one weekend is not a good tactic, because what I found is the first one had a distinct advantage. I feel like when I jammed 5 hours of stand-up in 2 days, they got less funny as I went along. Did anybody else experience the same thing?
I think it mattered how you watch them. I think it mattered the order. I tried to separate them, never going back to back to avoid that.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's like at some point I start seeing the patterns. Okay, race, men and women. You know, you can see the categories everybody goes into. And then so you're starting to go, who does the joke better? Now, Bubba, I have to tell you, in the pre-show meeting, there was a discussion among some on the show staff. Norm MacDonald's a P1. What are we going to do? And I think they were leading us to believe that they were all going to vote you last with Norm MacDonald. Do you want to preemptively say anything before that happens?
That's not shocking to me. I'm not shocked by that. They would do that to our biggest fan.
I know. They're really terrible. I don't know how to do this. I'll tell you guys this. Norm MacDonald did not come in fifth place for me. I had a very shocking upset on who ended up last. Before we lay them out, did anybody else, were you surprised at who came in fifth for you?
I was a little surprised because I do find this person very funny. I also think that somebody here picked the right comedian and the wrong special.
I agree with that.
I happen to agree with that as well. So I'm going to go in the interest of time and tell you who I voted last, okay? Last place this week is Mike A. with Dave Chappelle's Killing Me Softly. Yes. I know, Pat.
That's a way bigger upset than I thought it was going to be.
I couldn't believe it myself. I love Dave Chappelle, but what I found as I watch it is I like late Dave Chappelle much better. I find his new stuff smarter, more provocative. I think his style has been honed where he brings you in really slowly in this kind of comfortable way where you're going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he hits you with a curveball that is totally provocative. I just found his new stuff way better. And I don't think I'm just holding him to the Dave Chappelle standard. I just think Killing Him Softly, maybe it felt dated because it was from 2000 and the other ones were all much more recent.
It was the oldest of the ones we nominated.
It was. It got last for me. Keep going, fellas. What do you guys have?
Nuno?
Oof. So it's interesting you say that one because that I was battling back and forth with that one, and I found Norm funny, but not as funny as the other ones. But I did go with Norm as the last one.
Hater.
While I enjoyed all of them, Norm MacDonald finished in last for me. It didn't have a lot of big laughs, and it had a lot of good chuckles in there.
I loved his thing about Score, trying to bring Score back, and then Abe Lincoln's wife says, don't bring that back, just say 84. There were bits in everyone's that I love. Bubba, who'd you have in last?
Unfortunately, I'm going to go with Norm. Although I agree with your initial thing. I think all of them were funny. I laughed during all of them, so I feel bad saying Norm is last. But I'm going Norm as the number five for me.
Oh, he's voted his own last. Pat?
Yeah, it was Norm. Sorry, Norm.
I'm the only one that didn't vote Norm last in a shocking upset. Well, that leaves who got first. Will it be Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr? Will it be Louis C.K.? Or will it be Patrice O'Neill? I will tell you this. I was very pleasantly surprised by one of them. That's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.